Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Pedophile Huntress. We are here to talk about and normalize the things that are hard and the discussions that other people don't want to have. We'll have those discussions here head on. Tonight, we have one common goal: that you would be encouraged in heart and united in love with us as we go into these conversations. That's the only goal that we have. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the phantom pain that we have in life. And I want to start this time. It's somewhat unusual, and I always start these things a little bit different. But from my book, A Prisoner by No Crime of My Own, I wanted to start with the chapter called Phantom Pain. Now, there's been a lot of discussion around phantom pain after the book, The Body Keeps the Score, comes out. The Body Keeps the Score, I think that man is a remarkable man of God. It's almost like he's angel in flesh for what he's done for survivors. But to hear from the people who have walked through it, and he's heard millions of stories, but I wanted us to kind of walk through a little bit through that tonight. And I'm just going to read two paragraphs that will kind of set up what that feels like to be a person. Now, I'm 18 years old. I'm writing about when I was 18 years old because I got married at 18. And I said, before we married, Richard took me on a romantic rendezvous. I was 17 years old. Sorry, I was 17 years old. At a shabby motel on 82nd Avenue in Portland, Oregon, he registered and returned with the keys to the room. We then went to a Mexican dinner and I was excited, but something was wrong. Internally, I was freaking out. And I never tipped my hat, but the panic was rushing through me. We left and stopped at a small market for bubble bath and champagne. I knew we'd be going back to that motel room and couldn't figure out what the heck was wrong with me. My legs had begun that old dull ache since we pulled into the motel. We arrived back and parked. My legs were in such intense pain I couldn't walk. They'd become useless, immobilized with fear. What was my body doing to me? I was terribly embarrassed. Why now? Was I scared of sex? I knew what was about to happen, but I couldn't find the answer in my mind that night in 1982. But my body again was screaming at me. So, starting that, I want us to talk about, because I know that there isn't a survivor that has lived through childhood trauma, particularly. And I'm sure that this happens even with all kinds of trauma, but particularly childhood trauma. And each one of us, tonight, I want to stop for just a minute. Carol Boyce is back with me. And of course, we've talked about her book before, and you can hear her full interview also on all of the channels. Kaylee is also with me, and Kaylee has her own ministry and her own work that she does around that. Each one of us have come through incest. Kaylee's was brother, sister, me, and Carol's was father, daughter. And when that happens, and when that trauma we've talked about before, where it becomes our normal, right? Like we just get up, go through it. It happens time and time again. It happens day after day, week after week, whatever, every month. I mean, so what happens when we grow up and all of a sudden we look back and we realize there was something terribly wrong? Because, right, you guys, we don't always know there's something terribly, terribly wrong when we're walking through it. We really don't. So, can you talk to me about a time that you first felt a panic? Before even talking about a pain, can you first? I can remember panics that I'd have that I didn't know what was going on, but I knew something was desperately wrong. And usually I'd have some kind of a trigger of a remembrance, but it was always just like this dinky little thing. So, Kaylee, if you could start with, we'll move into pain in a minute, but just that panic feeling that comes to us in our adolescence, right? Usually when we move our early 20s, and then sometimes we're so busy in our teens and our 20s, our trauma doesn't return quite yet. But usually by the time we get into our 30s, our trauma's knocking at the door and all of that pain and panic is coming back to us. So if you can just think about a time and explain that to us, I'm gonna let you start.
Yes. So, just for the viewers, my brother, it wasn't my sister, but just my brother, but
Oh, I'm
he
so
sexually
sorry.
abused me.
Yes,
That's
I
okay.
yep.
He sexually abused me for 20 years of my life,
Oh,
and my biggest coping mechanism was disassociation. And so suppressing as far down as I possibly could. Well, I didn't even know that I was a sexual abuse survivor. I had no idea at all. drugs and alcohol was the way I medicated the pain. And it wasn't until I was about 31, which is exactly what you'd mentioned, that I was watching a TV show, and the person on this show was talking about their story of sexual abuse. And that was the moment that it triggered the memories inside of me. They became unlocked. And that was a massive panic moment for me, because I was sitting with a friend at night, and as I'm watching and I'm listening to this woman share her story, I start having my body start just trembling with anxiety, and I start sweating. I'm getting hot. I'm starting to have like hot flashes, and I feel like I have this like force of energy just coming up and out of my mouth. I had no idea what was happening, but I was confessing, and I ended up telling my friend, "Oh my gosh, I was sexually abused. I was sexually abused." Like, I had no idea, even though it happened for 20 years of my life. It was so suppressed. So that moment was massive panic for me. And just, I was drenched in sweat, shaking, convulsing. Like, it was terrifying in that moment. And that was the beginning of, you know, the awareness of, wow, I have a lot of pain right here.
It's, you know, and it's, I hear this time and time again, and people have, and Carol and I have discussed this before, and we will in just a minute again, Carol. People have a hard time saying, for 20 years this happened to you and you didn't remember.
You had no idea.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we're saying, for 20 years this happened and we didn't remember. I watched my father murder somebody. And mm-hmm. we can talk to you about those little tiny things that come through, which kind of why the reason I talked about that was, usually before though that moment, there are these things in our life that creep in. You know what I mean? Like, there'll be a panic or a something will trigger us and we'll think, what is going on? Something feels wrong. Something feels off. And that was beautiful that that was a big enough trigger to actually open that door. But a lot of times it's like we have these little mini things. It's like a mini start. You know what I mean? Like it's a mini something saying to you, something's wrong, but I don't know what's wrong. Did you have anything like that before 31 that you can articulate?
The only thing I had was, so the abuse happened physically from 5 to 16. And then from 16 to 25, the abuse happened in the form of spying on me in the shower and making sexual jokes with me. And those two things, I never knew the definition of sexual abuse. So a lot of that reasoning was why I didn't even know it was a part of my story. I knew nothing about that topic. But when he would spy on me in the shower, I would know that this was something fearful and terrifying, but I never connected the two, that this is sexual abuse and the gravity of that. I never connected the two. And for 13 years of my life, I was medicated by substance abuse. So there was a lot of numbing and not like being in tune to what was really going on in my inner world.
Yep, that's a huge point. Carol, go ahead. I'm going to let you talk about that for a minute. Can you remember having panic or, well, and like I'm not going to say something. I'll say something afterward, but you go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, first of all, I want to state, Kaylee, I had the exact same thing happen when I was 36 and had no idea. And this physical response, you're the first person I've heard say what that was like. Absolutely terrifying. But I had lots of weird terror. I was known for being very fearful. And like you say, it's creeping in into your subconscious. Something's wrong, you know, and it's not getting your attention. I think in the early times, I had bizarre things. I couldn't get on an airplane. This idea that someone else was in control and that I was locked in made me absolutely panicked. I mean, you just wouldn't believe what I went through if I had to fly somewhere. Strange things like that. I went in some caves. We travel a lot. Went in caves and absolute sheer terror when I got in the blackness and I felt like I couldn't get out. I had weird fears going in the ocean of going, you know, they would, my brothers and sisters would just kid me about how fearful I was. Of course, I always had the nightmares, always been prone to nightmares. No idea where any of it came from, right, Jody? You just,
oh, 100%.
These weird things.
It's so, you guys might, when Kaylee, so let me ask you, just like Carol said, it's so true. Our life is like a riddle. Like you said,
yes.
You knew it didn't feel good. It's like we lived a riddle, but nobody ever gave us the, you were so good when you articulated, nobody ever told me what sexual abuse was. When it happens when you're so young, which is why it's so important to tell people about the indoctrination of it. It's brought to us like it's just part of having cereal in the morning. And so when you're little and nobody comes and tells you it's wrong, then you just kind of go with it. And so it's funny how many people, I think it's interesting. And this is what is so important to me. Like when you said, Carol, I've never heard anybody have a violent reaction to a memory. It's good because actually many memories that come back, a lot of times we do react to. I've had dreams where that murdered lady was under my feet and I couldn't breathe all night long. I was up all night long because I had to call a friend over. I was terrified. So people don't realize that how much this lives in our body until it doesn't. And so the way that we get it out is by talking about it and hopefully listening to Kaylee, listening to us, listening to Carol explain these things. Our very heart is that you guys would be triggered in the same way that it would come out.
And I think this experience of where you've had zero idea this happened, you have absolutely nothing like Kaylee and I did. And when it first hits you, I think your brain is, I mean, it's amazing we don't stroke out or something. It is
it's so
unbelievably overwhelming. What a horrible, horrible experience. But I think it's always bubbling in there and strange things, you know, like when I go in the laundry room and there was a man in there and I'm just panicked. And then I look again, he's not there. And I go in the garage and there's some really scary man and then he's not there, you know.
That's a flashback. That's actually a flashback.
Your mind, right?
Right.
You think, well, it's just a quirk about me. It's just something quirky. Don't let anybody know.
Right.
You know, that was my thought.
And Kaylee, I think you brought up a very good point as well, that if we stay so medicated, and I know that there you use drugs, as I remember, because Kaylee's story is also, you guys, her full account is also on my YouTube channel and on the podcast as well. You can hear her, both of these courageous, brave women stories. But I think that's really true that, and I had children very young. I got married at 18 to a very abusive guy. So all I did was, I was so in his abuse that I didn't even have time to look at my other abuse. You know what I mean? He was cheating, hitting me, gone. So all I was just running around surviving. Then I have children. So often our stories, even if we have an inkling or whatever, you know, but did you live with your brother or how from till, you guys stayed incredibly close through the years.
Yeah. So, growing up, he was like my father figure because my parents weren't really engaged a lot. There's a lot of different types of chaos in my childhood. So, my brother was like a father figure to me, and I always looked at him as my protector because he would protect us from my father's physical abuse. So there's a lot of, you know, confusion and mixed up just lies. But we lived I can't remember the exact age, but it had to be maybe around somewhere in my 20s, where maybe even a little bit before that, where he moved out. He was married. My brother was 5 years older than me. So he wasn't like this massive age difference, which I think also that plays a role in my journey of healing from childhood, him being only 10 when I was 5. But we were always close, and I was always hanging out with him and his wife. And we would, his wife and I were addicted together to our pills. And he would, you know, drink and smoke. So we just, in that environment together, that was like our kind of bonding with, you know, the substance use.
Hugely, hugely, you know, and for the viewers, Kaylee's brother passed early. And one of the things that's really complicated about that, and I put that clip on Kaylee, and that clip, I think that was the clip that actually has been viewed thousands and thousands of times. But one of the things that's so complicated is we loved our abusers. That people don't understand that pedophiles do not lead like monsters in the corner where they're beating the shit out of you and not treating you right. They love you.
Right.
They're your best friend. You're in this secret love affair collusion with them. Mm-hmm. And I cannot say this strong enough, because people don't want to step in the reality of the rejection and all of the stuff that really lives in those relationships, and the control and the mental abuse and the physical abuse and the sexual abuse. But that's a huge part. And so then when these abusers pass, we're confused again because we're
sad. Whole other layer.
It's a whole layer. It's a whole nother layer to it. So without going down that for a minute, one of the things I kind of wanted to focus on too, so you guys really did both touch on this panic that is there. Now, I'm not talking about the pain of a broken heart, because the pain of the broken heart is devastating and can destroy a life as well. I'm talking about if you guys ever remember growing up and having pain in your life. So when we're little and going through the abuse, our hearts are so severed from the emotions that we don't really feel a broken heart. I think we can probably all agree with that. But what happens is our bodies will often manifest childhood pain. And so I had debilitating leg pain. And what I've never really talked about this a lot, but it was so bad. I'd wake up in the middle of the night with my legs just hurting so desperately, like what people talk about, like coming off drugs and that kind of stuff. But I was a little girl, and I would get up, I'd run a hot bath in the middle of the night, and that would make that pain stop. But you guys, it happened chronically as a child. And so I didn't know what was going on. You know what I mean? But I still didn't think, wow, that's because I'm getting sexually abused. I didn't even think about it. All I knew was then I was focused on this pain. So I wonder if you guys had any just abstract weird pain in childhood in your body that you can't, you know, that you couldn't describe, or sicknesses all the time. Or did your physical body ever show anything?
I had some very serious respiratory problems. You know, I had the other issue that my father was a physician. And so, you know, you're kind of like, dad comes in the room with a stethoscope, and he liked to massage me when I was sick. And, you know, now I look back and I think, oh, that's so sick. But, you know, at the, like you said, you have no clue what's going on. I mean, you just have, you're so clueless. But, you know, I did get like really sick with pneumonia and some other illnesses that I'm sure, you know, it takes a major toll on you physically.
Major.
But I find that very interesting that you had those leg pains. It's really interesting. Yeah. Like something that would make you not able to move and like freeze.
Yes.
You talk that freeze response.
Exactly.
But, you know, the leg pain is almost like that, right? Just, and that when you woke yourself up enough to take the bath, you could probably reground yourself and say, okay.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, right.
Very, and it's interesting.
It really is interesting when you think about that. Cause you know, that was, I would have recurring dreams and that sort of thing. But outside of that, I do think it's important, because the reason, again, that I say this is to break these patterns in people's lives. I know people who are, they're debilitated, you guys, now. They're in their 40s, 50s, and they're debilitated. Yes. They cannot walk. Yeah. And so the association with our bodies in this, it usually starts playing out in childhood far before we get into adulthood. Kaylee, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I didn't have, you know, things in regards to the sexual abuse that I can pinpoint. That were physical. However, the being paralyzed in my body, that I also in my childhood had a lot of rage and anxiety, but a lot of that was directed towards my father's physical abuse. And as a little girl, I would just like curl in a ball and just shake and tremble. I had so much rage inside of me. And then one of the physical symptoms that once entering into healing and realizing the connection was as I got older with sexual abuse relation, I mean, sorry, sexual relationships with my boyfriends, I always had this physical response to cover. Like my body just automatically would just cover my chest. And that's because the first place my brother would violate me was my chest. So I would naturally could never just feel safe to be surrendered. I always had to just hold some sense of control because I didn't feel safe. So that was one of my physical
right. And
symptoms.
You know, listening to you, think about this for a minute, ladies. So many times we're getting abuse in multiple ways, not just one. Yeah. So your father's hitting you.
Right.
But where do you get your comfort? You go to your brother for comfort, and then he sexually abuses you. This is, and yeah. Usually these homes, unfortunately, you know, look like this. But yeah, Kaylee, your comfort. And many times I talk about my father being my comforter because my mother was very cold and distant. And she was also a sexual predator, but not all the time. But she just ignored me the rest of the time. You know what I mean? And so our abusers often are the ones who comfort us. And I know Carol's talked about that as
yeah.
well. But
my father was just mild, very mild, gentle man.
Yeah, that's so crazy
he
to me.
Never saw any aggression out of him. My mother was a raging alcoholic. And I think it's like you say, Kaylee, you spend all your energy. I have so much anger at my mother, and how could she do this to our family? How could she do this, you know, and just having absolutely no time for my emotions. It was all her emotions. And I think it's true. We all have this scenario that we make up as to what is wrong at home, but we don't really know the truth, you know, and it does come out physically. And, you know, I talk about, I developed the eating disorder, which is also, you know, manifesting it physically.
Oh, it's huge. I haven't talked to hardly any survivors that don't have some kind of weird thing with food, because we can control it. We can not control it. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's this ready access thing, but it is.
And it's sedating.
It is sedating.
Yes.
It is sedating.
So I think this energy is coming out somehow. We're sedating somehow. You know, you can't live with the pain. You just can't live and not have somewhere to go with it until you start recovering and start looking at what happened. And I think all three of us have so many issues. It's so tied together and confused, and you know, it takes a long time.
Right. Well, and I think
a long time.
It does. One of the things that you just said, I think, is really profound. And I also know that people that are listening are not always sexually abused, but the way that you identify sexually abused children, there are signs that you can look for. And I think I remember growing up, and this neighbor lady said to me, I knew, I had a feeling you were sexually abused, because she also was sexually abused as a child.
Really?
If you see it, please do something about it.
Do something.
Because the truth is, you guys, like what you said, we don't know what to do with it, but our little bodies can't house it. And that's why we get this physical pain. Yes. It's why, Kaylee, you barricaded yourself just to say, I can't take anymore. You know, it's these kinds of things that when you see a child in that way, why does society ignore this, you guys? I'm so appalled sometimes, and it's why I do the work that I do. I mean, I pray and fast. Like, it matters to me to make a difference, because we have millions, you guys, multi-millions and millions of children and survivors of childhood sexual abuse, but nobody does anything about it. We have a day for sexual abuse, but it's for all survivors of that meaning when you were raped at 30 and all this. It is bigger than the Holocaust, what is happening to children and what has happened to children in the past. but nobody will do anything about it. And you guys, it's genocide in a way, if you think about it, because it is an attack on the human race.
Yes.
And it is not good. And when you read genocide, I actually did a post about this, and there's five elements to genocide. You know, childhood sexual abuse fits them all, you guys, because what does it leave in our life? It tries to extinguish us. Many of us don't have children. I know so many survivors that never had children. You know, thankfully, many of us do, but there's a lot who do not. Their reproductive systems don't work. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about, why does society ignore this? Now, God does not ignore this. I know God does not ignore this, but society at large ignores this all the time. And Kaylee, tell me in your heart, just from your heart's take, why do you think even the churches ignore it? Now, churches don't really like it. They'll put you in a back corner and let you do your little group and heal, but they're not going to stand from the pulpit and talk about it. They're not going to stand and they really aren't, which is so sad, because Jesus would have. He said, you touch my little ones, you'll be seeing me in another time. Don't do it. And I know that justice lives there. But talk to me a little bit about what your heart feels around that.
Yeah, I've thought about this so many times before.
Have you?
I truly believe it's rooted in fear from a lack of knowledge. They don't know what to do. So fear keeps them bound without any action. They don't know how to get equipped. I mean, that I've walked women for 5 years through the healing journey of sexual abuse. And that's something I see all around. Like, everyone's
it's everywhere healing
journey. It's just like, it's everywhere. It's so it's common. Everywhere. And then to think of such an innocent life as a child, people don't know what to do, because also those in the family, there's also a part of, once they realize, oh, someone's been sexual abused, they go on their own journey sometimes of like, am I at fault here? And then parents, right? Sometimes moms, or they'll go on that journey of like guilt, and then they don't know how to act. So that's something that I've seen a lot. And even in the church, it's like, when people are afraid, even in their nervous system, stepping outside of that place, they don't move until they have enough knowledge, and they don't have enough knowledge until they get equipped and gain knowledge.
Where's the knowledge? Where are they getting knowledge? Right.
Right. Which is why what we're doing to use our voice and shine light to equip people to identify and have that knowledge, it gives them some sense of safety of like, okay, I have that, so maybe I can move a little bit forward towards the healing journey. Maybe I'm learning from what they're sharing. Oh, these are the things to identify. Oh, this is what I can do. So I truly believe in my heart that it's a lack of knowledge rooted in fear.
I like that.
Something I wanted to say too, along these lines. sorry, I'm recovering here.
Thank you for being here while you're sick.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
I had a funny thing happen this week, and it was one of the major sexual abuse prevention organizations sent out an email, and it said, do you know your child is not safe at home? And I thought, yes, they're getting that, telling parents that incest can be happening in your home. I opened it up and they said, it's on the internet. Your kids are not safe because of the internet.
Oh.
And I thought, here they are, this major organization, and they're not even willing to bring up incest in the home.
You guys.
And it just floored me, you know? But that's, so many of the organizations focus on the strangers out there, which absolutely there are.
Well,
you know,
almost 90%, and I'm going to say this till I go home, almost 90% of all 90% are not, it's not stranger danger, you guys. It's somebody the child knows. Somebody the child knows. Somebody the child knows. Stop the stranger danger thing. I mean, it's just very seldom the stranger danger thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have to scream that from the rooftops. You know, this is what Americans think, or what people think. This is the church is when you look at the amount of sexual abuse that happens
Right.
within churches, and
It's
particularly
horrible.
the far right churches seem to have an awful lot of this. You know, I think it's very, very uncomfortable for them to take a look at, you know, it could be going on in their own churches or in their own environments. It's people do not want to look at this. And like my family to this day, after 30 years, totally denies it, that my father could have ever done this. He was just such a wonderful man.
Well, and my siblings as well deny it. And well, my one sister wrote a book and talked about dad sexually abusing her. The truth is, you guys, yeah, she did. But the other two did not. Yeah. And one of the problems with this, but she very much minimized it. It was, you know, one thing that she talked about. And but I'm very thankful that she did talk about it, because, you know, it was cooperation in the family. But it's just, it takes so much strength, doesn't it, to step into the story. Kaylee, like the way where we started was, I didn't remember at all. I just knew I had a very good relationship with my brother. My dad was kind of meek and mannered, which he's raping a child. I would not call that a mild manner.
No, I would not anymore.
Isn't that weird, though? I just said this to a survivor the other day, a warrior survivor, as I like to call him, but she called because something happened. And one of the things I said was, we do not see that they're monsters when we're young. And so this person had just passed. And one of the problems is it's very confusing. It's so conflicting what we feel, because it's not just like, woohoo, you know, you're going to hell or whatever it is you want to believe. It never feels like that. It's very convoluted because the first thing a pedophile builds in us is a very strong relationship, that they care for us, that they love us, that against the world and all odds, we're their favorite person in the world. And we believe that, right? You guys.
Yeah, they gaslight you. I mean, you know, the whole thing is gaslighting.
Right. But on a much deeper, deeper level, gaslighting to me is so, I mean, that it's a good term, except this is, it's genocide. They actually, it's really hard to articulate that people that carry it on, it's a very mean-spirited thing to do to another human being, to keep them in deception and denial, and then to breathe life into that. You know what I mean? It's an act of cruelty that's you know, really bad. I want to turn this for just a minute here and talk about some of the things that we talked about some of these signs in childhood and that sort of thing. Now, I am a very firm believer in going to therapy and using modalities, and you've got to do the work of journaling. You've got to do the work of getting it out, you know, and I very much believe that, I can do all these things, but in my heart, I believe that a broken heart can only be healed by God. But I wanted us to talk for a minute, and relationship, no religion. I am so far from a religious person you'll ever want to meet, but I'm a great big Jesus girl. So I just want to talk about, it's kind of like me and my daughters were talking this weekend, and their church said, you can pray all you want, but if you don't do anything, it's not, you can't, you know what I mean? It's not. So let's just talk a little bit about what faith and healing and all that looks like, just for a minute, because obviously I have a strong faith. You can't listen to this and not do that. At the same time, I believe we have got to do the work of healing. You don't just get to show up and put like five pieces of your past on a plate and go, God bless this, and I'm going to throw it out the window and it's done. Yes. So can you guys, I don't care who starts, but let's just talk about this just freely together. Because I think it's very interesting, and I think it's worthy of conversation, because the Christian church hides what healing looks like, right? And it's not just this, I mean, am I bad? Will God look at me if I heal until I go home? What if I'm 75 and I'm triggered about something that happened that I forgot? Am I bad? Is God bad? Am I not healed? So what does that look like a little bit?
Well, I think it's great you bring it up, Jody. Faith is a wonderful thing, and I don't want to lump churches in one category. I mean, they're all
100%.
Over the board.
I don't think
the
any of
fabulous
us do.
ones, destructive ones, you know. But I think, you know, I'm a person that really healed by really getting it out and doing a lot of therapy. So I was not really involved, you know, with the faith community too much. But I believe, you know, I believed a lot in God and that he was, you know, I could talk to him. And, but I really felt that he knew I had to get it out of me. And I think that's the most important thing is this physically crying, pounding, screaming, yelling, doing whatever you can to get this emotion out. I think it's when so we sit, true. Hold it all in is when we get extremely depressed. I think that's really what depression is holding it all in. And so I think there's many modalities. I think everybody has to find their own path to healing. Right. And of course it's ongoing. You know, I've been healing for a long, long time and there's plenty more.
Me too.
To do,
me too.
Right?
Boy, can I laugh about that. And
Boy.
You know, go ahead, Kate.
I was going to say, I'm so glad you brought this up, Jody. And like you, Carol, I think it's so important that we do the inner work. We don't just pray it away, right?
No.
When it keeps coming back up, there's something that's trying to unearth from our heart that we need to address. And I'm a Christian life coach, so I always focus on helping people do the inner work on the heart. Because that's what helped me. And our pain has a voice, but we don't always listen to it. And a lot of times when we're numbing or avoiding, we're running from the pain that's there, from feeling it, allowing it to have a voice, to our articulating what happened, to releasing the stored emotion, the trauma in the body. And I remember on my healing journey, I shared before about Journey to Heal. I came across this book, and the biggest chapter in it for me was chapter 2, because it says to face the truth. And there is a truth that we carry about our story. And when we don't face the truth by bringing it into the light, by communicating, by allowing someone else to come alongside and hold space for us so we can feel seen and kind of, you know, rewire the brain from the ways that the triggers happen, the trauma happen. We have to step in the faith or step in a different direction to allow it to come to light. The facing the truth part was truly the breaking down of all that pain inside and allowing it to surface. And I remember I was just sharing with someone about this yesterday. There was a day when I was going through the Journey to Heal book where I was on the bathroom floor in the fetal position, having the most excruciating pain from my body because I was vocalizing and sharing what happened to me, and my body was physically responding. I had so much pain in my body. I have never been one to go to the hospital, but this was a time I thought I might need to go. Like it was the worst pain of my entire life.
Oh, we understand.
My body. And through that process of the release, as I continue to purge up and out my story of what happened to me, and for me, aligning it to God's word. So this is the story. This is the belief systems that got rooted in my heart. This is what happened to me. An alignment with who God says I am. This fallen world, all of the pain and the lies of the devil, as I began to align, it was like revelation started coming in. So the pain releasing gave a new capacity to hold truth into my heart, the soil of my heart. So the truth was beginning to root into me. And my favorite verse in the whole Bible, once you know the truth shall set you free. You have to get it into your nervous system, get it into your heart. Once I got the truth down in there that, oh, this is what happened to me. This is why I had these belief systems. This is why the fruit of my behavior was private dancing and addiction and not believing out of my worth and my identity, all these types of things, the effects. Oh, I'm seeing all this stuff. The illumination was happening. The knowledge was coming. The equipping was coming. Once I got the truth in me and released that pain onto the Lord and got it out of me, there was so much lightness that happened in my spirit. and a joy, unspeakable joy, a peace that surpasses understanding. And it was so miraculous that that's when I had felt God put it on my heart. I'm calling you to help lead others into the same hope and healing I've led you in. So that's why for 5 years, I led these groups with Journey to Heal Ministries. And I had seen so many crazy experiences from people addressing their pain, addressing the truth, having
it's not
some
pretty
sort of
when that
relief.
Comes
it's
out,
not
you
pretty.
Know,
no,
it's
not
sure
pretty, because
it is
it's
not
also very scary.
Physical relief.
It's
incredible.
It's
very
scary.
Yes.
Scary
to feel
yes.
it. Yeah. But so, all of us in our own way took, decades of experiences, horrors, and stuffed it in this body somewhere. And you look back as a child and you think, how could you possibly have functioned? How could you possibly have grown?
For
and of course,
me,
many of people did not make it.
You guys,
I'm sure
they did not.
Many did not make it.
They
and,
didn't.
It's like we have to now, start that process of releasing it. And like they say, God won't give you more than you can handle. I had to believe
Doesn't feel
that
like
because,
that.
right? Because I was so overwhelmed and so terrified of what I might think of tomorrow or what I might face tomorrow.
100%.
It was like I had to have some faith that I would make it. I would be able
You
to
know,
handle it.
exactly. And I'm going to share mine a little bit. I think it's important for each one of us to bring this. I really came from a lot of darkness. I mean, I really believe that both of my parents carry spirits with them. I mean, they were just really dark people and they practiced darkness. Yeah. And anyway, so for me, when I really got into healing, I was angry at God, and I couldn't separate God from me because I met him when he found me when I was three. That's how I always say it. So I couldn't really separate myself from him. And I'm thankful for that. He pursued me, but I have to say, I took him with me, but I was angry, and it was really hard for me. It wasn't like, okay, Jesus, we're going to counseling. It did not look like that for me. It looked like, what am I going to face in that room? And what is my life going to look at like when I come out of that room?
Right.
Because sometimes I would walk out of that room, you guys, and the fog of PTSD would be everywhere. And I'd think, what the hell did I just do? All I'm doing is wrecking my life. It felt like that for years sometimes. And I would come home and grab my Bible and go to sleep. Like I felt the same way that I needed him with me because I couldn't do it without, but it wasn't like I was in this happy, woohoo, this light's coming to me kind of thing. And for my journey, it didn't feel like that. And I mean, no disrespect, Kaylee, at all. I just wasn't, it took me a long time to want to go back to church. It really did because my father taught me about God and took my virginity, and he did Bible study in the front, rape in the back. And I was very confused about then what God really looked like. What did the church look like? Like, think about all of the faith hurt that's around. I'm just a real person. And you know what? I'm thankful God didn't leave, because I wasn't very happy with him for a long, long time. You know what I mean? But he didn't leave me, and I'm thankful for that. So anyway, that's kind of my experience. I just didn't have this. It didn't feel like all of this light busting through. I had some real serious darkness to go through. It was serious darkness to go through.
Well, I'm not saying like when I share that the light, that it was just like here and it was done.
Oh, okay.
This book specifically talks about every angle of how the sexual abuse can affect you. It talks about statistics, facts, how society gets affected. You look at patterns, you look at the story that happened to you, you address the pain, you feel the unsettled emotions, you address the anger. Chapter 6 was huge for me because I was an atheist for 25, or sorry, for the majority of my life, over 25 years, I was an atheist.
That's
I hated
awesome.
God.
I mean, I'm,
I
yeah.
hated the idea of God and Christians because I thought they were
it's
getting too
important
true.
For us to talk about the truth of that, because many of us do.
Yes.
How do you not come through a childhood of hell and just be like, oh, I can't wait to get to church and throw rose petals down? I'm
God
not
was
good at
watching
that.
Over me. I mean, you
exactly.
don't have that
yeah
feeling.
yes
Yeah.
you know
yeah. so so I was gonna say, this book really looks at all angles, and it addresses just the heart of it. as a whole.
And yeah, so, and that, right, I love that. No, and that's beautiful. And I just want us to bring that all up. I mean, I was in counseling for 20 years, and I don't think everybody watched a murder, you know, at four. So everybody's story is going to be different too.
Different.
And this is why, honestly, I love us all coming together, because like, you were an atheist. I never really was, but I definitely determined that my God, the God of my father, was not the God that I knew, because it's hard when you come through a religious background and you have this man teaching you who God is while all the time he and mom are taking you to the back room, diddling you all the time. That's a really hard experience to separate. And so I remember talking to my nephew and saying, there's two gods, the God of my father and the God I know. And they're two separate gods. And I don't believe that his God was the God of the Bible, but you know, we each have our own, which I love. That's why I really love having panels with everybody, because each one of us brings a different thing. And for you, how beautiful to be an atheist and not to have come from that, then to find God. It's probably better then, actually. I mean, don't get me wrong. He is the foundation of everything I am and everything I do. But it just looked different for me because it was very convoluted. It was, faith was like faith. You know, I mean, I was angry. I wanted to go do what all the men did because they were the ones that seemed to have the power. Like, you know, when you get into all of those healing parts, for me, it wasn't, it was a long journey for me to, and I feel like I'm a grow, like Paul always says, not that I've obtained it, but I'm going to stress on, I'm going to stress to capture what, so run I feel the, like, I feel like to run that good race, it's a lifetime journey, and I'm in it to win it. And so I'm just really authentic, man, because I never know. Like the other night I had a dream about my father, and sometimes I won't have a dream for a year now. I used to have dreams all the time. And so to just be authentic, I like to give our viewers the real sense of what that looks like. And it very well could look very different for other people.
It looks, I think it looks very
it
different.
It does.
I think we have, all of us have different stories. We've had different things happen.
Exactly.
But I think most of the damage is pretty close to similar.
Yeah.
And that's what brings us together. You know,
it is. It's really beautiful. Yeah. It is beautiful.
And I was going to say, like, the healing journey is a journey, and there's layers, right?
Yep.
We get triggered from different layers over season to season. And once we enter into the pit of that wound, and you start unpacking the depth of it,
right,
as you continue to do that, the triggers become less and less charged, emotional charge from those specific triggers, from those realities that came up for you.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, so, we've lived it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We have both lived it, love. So we know exactly what you're talking about.
And if you really get control of, you know, trigger my response, trigger my response.
That's exactly
right. That's a wonderful, empowering thing.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's why I don't go to counseling anymore, because he left and God left. I have all the tools I need for every trigger that comes into my life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so you're exactly right. There is this beautiful part that you get to where my life is really relatively peacey. I do dinner parties. I get to make cakes now. I get to enjoy my grandkids. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even be present for my own children because I was encased in such pain. And then when I divorced their father at 35 and decided, I got to do life different because he was a terribly abusive guy. Mm-hmm. Well, my kids are now teenagers. They've also been living in a prison. You know, but I love having all of us at all of our different ages, you know, because Kayla, you started much sooner. And, you know, I don't know if you want to have a family, but if you're blessed with a family, you know, you'll be more available for that. And that's why I say healing really is of the essence. People are always like, you know, I am in a hurry about it. I am in a hurry to tell people, don't delay your healing, because there's a high cost to it. And so
there's
I love that.
Cost.
There's a high cost to healing, delaying, you know, delaying that healing. And so, no, I love your enthusiasm and I love all that. Unfortunately, you know, I'm 60, Carol, you know, we're both in our 60s. And so for
I'm
us,
69.
Yeah, I know. And I can't believe, well, I'm 59. So we're 10 years apart. And so it's so important to listen to the things that Kaylee are saying and grab that healing journey. My children will be very different than me because they followed my path much earlier and they learned about all the modalities and then they've really brought faith back into it. But guess what? They were pretty angry at God too. They're like, Mom, you and your faith, you can go somewhere else in a different room because I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And just now in their later 30s, they're finding their own. And so do not get me wrong that I believe in all of this and the beautiful journey, but do get me right that it's going to take time and it's going to take commitment to be in the process, right? And it's what we're talking about, having those tools like trigger and what did you say, Carol? I love that. Trigger and what was it?
The trigger response.
Yes, because it's so true. Like I'm triggered and now I'm getting that, but I know exactly what to do with it because sometimes, you know, you still can be triggered. And I really want, I feel like some Christian, I don't know, dialects, because that's really what it is there's so many Christian dialects. Mm-hmm. I feel like they hurt people by saying, oh, if in 5 years you have a trigger, you're not really healed. Well, mm-hmm. you know, can you talk about that a little bit, Kaylee? Because that's not really fair, is it? Right?
Right. I think it's so important once you enter into the healing journey and realize, okay, this is a part of my story. I need to face it. And you start learning the healing modalities, emotional health tools, the triggers, realizing that we have to be in tune to where our heart is in any season.
Exactly.
So, you know, however, maybe 5 years later on the road, once you hit, you had already done the depth of that healing, you get another trigger. Okay, do the process.
Exactly.
Don't pray
That's,
it away
I love
or
that.
Think,
exactly.
Like allow, be in tune with where your heart is in that moment mm-hmm. and do the process of allowing yourself to feel the pain that's surfacing, to release it.
Exactly.
And continue to move forward. And we're all going to, we don't always know what's deep inside of our heart until we get triggered, until we get into different realities of our life and something kind of unearths in a moment. And so that's why I think this whole healing journey is so important to remember. It's a journey.
It is.
There's no like, I'm an arrival. You do get breakthrough and healing in different ways.
You do.
As you
it's
enter
true.
Into healing, you do. It's like that, the chain of the bondage, how deep it was, you start to grow and heal, but there's always different layers and different seasons. So just being in tune to where your heart is so important, and just being authentic and facing the truth. Where is my heart in any given moment?
Right. It's so.
And I found,
go right ahead.
And I found, you know, I had gone so many years of feeling just crazy from these triggers. I had no idea where they were going to come from, when they were going to happen, and whether I could even pretend I was normal, you know, and not let people know how much I was going through. And then when I healed enough to realize, oh, I'm being triggered. I still am getting triggered, but to be able to say, oh, that's what it is. It's triggering my past and all my trauma. Is hugely relieving. You know, I'm not losing my mind, and you know,
so you do feel like you're going crazy.
Oh,
and then and
gosh.
Then the whole defense for these, when they go to court, it's like, you're nuts or sluts. I always say that, but the truth is, you do feel like you're going crazy until all of a sudden you step into your story. And I'm going to tell you something, your mind is sounder than the person next to you. And I feel that way today. I have a really strong job and my mind is pushed and taxed daily. Yeah. And you guys, my mind is strong and articulate and nobody's messing with this mind again.
Nobody's
ever.
And you know, your abuser did everything they possibly could
to mess with our mind, our cognitive ability.
And make you feel like you were just losing your mind.
Yep.
Yeah, they did everything possible. And it was like,
so true.
That you come out strong and whole is just incredible, you know.
Exactly. Right. Like we talk about that. You know, like, I'm a director in a law firm. Carol is she's saying in Carnegie Hall, you guys, I love this. And then, and Kaylee is a Christian life coach. Like, this is the truth is, we could tell you, we could come on, and we talked about this before we started. We could come on and tell you how good our lives are, but maybe we should end with, you know what? Our lives really are good now. So the reason we come here is so that you get a real understanding, not from a doctor who wrote a book called The Body Keeps the Score, but from somebody who lived it and came out on the other side and is living a good life.
And I have an amazing life, you know.
Exactly. We all do.
I've been married for 48 years and two wonderful children, grandchildren.
I've got five grandbabies.
So there is real joy on the other side of this.
So I think that's a beautiful, that we should end that way with, because we started with, we could just come on here and tell you how good it is, but I can remember there were times I could barely get up and move in the morning in my 30s. I was in so much pain, and I didn't want to hear how good somebody was. If somebody was married 48 years, good, go somewhere else.
Don't do that. Don't tell me about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so I started doing the hard labor of getting to my real story. And I cannot tell you the joy that that brings and the husband that it brought me. And, you know, I've been married a few times because I was really angry. I had every right to be really angry.
Yep.
And I have every right. I think God knows the whole story always. And he told me, I have nothing but understanding for you, Jody. So anyway, ladies, I've never done this before, but tonight we're at time. I can't believe it. It always goes so fast, but we are at time. And so I want to just leave with this. I want you to finish this sentence for me. And Kaylee, I'll start with you. In a perfect world, God would.
In a perfect world. Well, it's kind of interesting the way I'm seeing it, because in a perfect world, I want to say he would reveal his love to everyone, but he's done that. So in the flip side, it's an imperfect world that I wish just knew his love.
Oh, that's cool. It's beautiful. Carol, go ahead.
I wish he would take away child pain, teach the world how to keep children safe and happy.
Oh, so that's cool. In a perfect world, what I would say is, God, stop child molestation, right? Just, you know what? I remember being in the shower one time, you guys, and I heard God say to me, Jody, the pedophile huntress. And I'm like, what, God? You guys, I was in the shower and I'm like, the pedophile huntress? Really, God? Really?
I love it.
You know what, you guys, it was really hard to step into that. But you know what I know about God's heart is, stop touching my little ones. Stop touching my little ones. So in a perfect world, we're going to stop pedophiles one secret at a time. Until next time, love you all so much. Father, protect these women through the week. And we'll see you next time. Good night, ladies.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Bye.